You've already jumped ahead and you talked about Dick Schmitz. How did you come to the attention of KAKC?
Through that business about supplying stories to the Associated Press.
They saw that
there's there's somebody over in Cushing who's doing a good job getting local news. And you could barely hear our signal in Tulsa. But Dick told me later that he had found it and he had listened to me two or three times. He called me over and said, "Do you want to move to Tulsa?" And I said, "Sure."
As easy and simple as that?
Yeah, pretty much. $350 a week and the use of a car. It was a station wagon that had Long's carpet painted on the side.
And that
I say $350 a week. It was $350 a month.
KAKC was a rock and roll station.
Yeah, top 40 format. A guy named Gordon McClendon changed radio forever in Dallas when he put that format on the air at a station. But McClendon duplicated it in Dallas and Houston and two or three other stations generally across the country. And this happens in radio a lot, as you know. If it works in Minneapolis, there's no reason it shouldn't work in St. Louis and so forth. So every market had a top 40 station, and most of those were incredibly successful, including KAKC. Totally dominated the market for a long time.
So we had names like Sam Cooke and Gene Vincent and Chuck Berry and Fats Domino. And
yeah, except those are rock and roll people. I didn't know any of them.
But that's what your station was probably playing.
Oh, yeah, sure. But I was doing the news. I didn't listen to any of that stuff.
And about in the mid-50s, we had a young man by the name of Elvis Presley who came along.
I think Blue Suede Shoes and that Presley thing started in like 53, 58, something like that. I remember him being very big when I was at least in college, which would have been 53, 56, something like that. I mean, that's what they were playing at OU, you know, in the dormitories and in the bars that we're not supposed to go into, that sort of thing.
And would have been playing as you came to KAKC.
Sure.
But music was not your thing, so you really didn't pay much attention to that.
I didn't pay any attention to it at all. I was supposed to do a five-minute newscast 5 minutes before the hour, I think, and then do a little sports and a little weather. And when I wasn't available, the disc jockeys read the news. And the only time that I ever had to go on was if they absolutely, desperately needed somebody to fill a disc jockey slot. I mean, typically it'd be on Saturday night or something, and everybody would be sick or gone or on vacation or something. All of the disc jockeys, the Big Seven or whatever they were called, had these little customized theme songs. It's early in the morning, and here you are in KAKC, and it's time for the Dick Schmidt Show. And then there'd be a little musical bridge in which a disc jockey would come in and say, "Hi, glad to have you with us. Stay with us for the show. We're here until 9 o'clock with you." And then the chorus would come back in and say, "It's time for the Dick Schmidt Show." So those things were cut out for everybody, but they didn't do one for me. I just couldn't see expending the money for that. But I still had to open with something on the rare occasions when I would have to do that. So I played the Mickey Mouse song. It really made the station manager very angry. He talked to Dick, who was the program manager and who was the person responsible for assigning the disc jockeys. He said, "Try to keep Vaughn off as much as you possibly can." And he did, pretty much.
And you were in agreement with that, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
With KAKC dominating, it was a source of news, and yet you had KRMG,
mm-hmm.
KVOO.
Mm-hmm.
They were also doing news.
Yeah, not like we were doing it.
Okay, how was it you were doing it?
It was hit 'em and get 'em and everything first and everything fast, blazing speed in terms of the reads, went out and covered it from the scene. You see smoke anywhere in Tulsa, you turn on KAKC, there it is, because they've got somebody there. We had people who would call us day and night with news stories. We actually staffed, as well as you could at that point, city commission at that point, meetings. You knew who the mayor was. You did everything you could for the schools, that kind of thing. So you were constantly out in the community and doing those things. And it was also good for the DJs to be involved in that sort of thing. One of them, Harry Wilson, got a complimentary set of fire department gear. including a hat and the big galoshes or whatever you call those things, and the rubber suits and all that kind of thing. And when there would be a fire, Harry would be there, and he had his stuff in his car. So he'd put on his gear and jump out and help the firemen.
And he was a disc jockey.
Yeah.
But he then served as a news person, and so that happened every once in a while.
Yeah, it happened every once in a while. And the disc jockeys would have to read. Sometimes if I didn't want to do the sports, they would do the sports, and I never had any interest in sports, so it was fine. Scooter Seagraves, a guy who's still alive and works over in Arkansas now, although he calls himself Scott, his real name was George Basil Seagraves III. Scooter would always, whenever he would do the sports, he'd say, okay, here are some baseball scores. Yankees 3, the Mets 4, the winning pitcher was unpronounceable name. And he would just float right through it. I mean, if he came on to Carl Yastrzemski or somebody, you know, he couldn't get it, he would just substitute unpronounceable name. And people seemed to enjoy it. It was okay. Didn't take ourselves that seriously.
Mm-hmm. This approach to news, did that come with the format of rock and roll, or was that a local news person that said, we're going to go out and get it now, and we're going to be on the scene immediately?
It was part of the package that McClendon put together. You ran the news at a certain time. As I recall, it was 5 minutes before the hour, but you also did a minute down bottom of the hour someplace, and then you did weather a couple of places and sports once, I think, but never for more than a minute other than that five-minute thing. Of course, something happening, you break in, you take as long as you want. I don't care if it was commercials or music or whatever, so that you would adopt this character of always being there and always being first. And if it happens, we're going to cover it better, faster than anybody else, because this is the new KAKC.
So that must have been in the minds of some of the, say, older folk at the time, perhaps having to put up with this rock and roll music because we want to know what the latest in news is, and we know it's going to happen.
It was a remarkable phenomenon. We were playing music that was really geared toward teenagers, early teenagers, like typical would be 13-year-old girls. That's who it was designed for. But all of a sudden, and I have no idea why, people, regular people, middle-aged people, started listening to it. And by listening to the music, they would listen to the news that way, the news package that went along with it. The shares were 75 or 80%, something like that. No one could understand it. And then everybody else had to adjust in town. And you've got to remember, too, that there weren't nearly that many stations at that point. I think there were four or five, maybe. Nobody on FM except KWGS, but nobody had FM sets, so that really didn't matter. So it was kind of a cultural thing, not a big deal, but it was an identifiable thing that happened. And we just took over the city.
Coupled with that, what I suppose would be the fact that stations like KRMG were still taking network programming.
Oh, yeah.
So they were listening to Arthur Godfrey, maybe, and some of those things, and they weren't as equipped. You guys were running a live show, and they weren't always live.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a night and day difference.
It fell right into
what
you
looked like.
Right.
There were some live shows on KRMG and in other stations. I still remember Johnny, who did the nighttime thing at KRMG.
Johnny Martin.
Johnny Martin did that for 100 years, it seems like.
Right.
He said it's Friday night, case night, as I recall.
Case night in the city.
Yeah. But it wasn't any place close. Wasn't any place close. There was just a whole new attitude. I kept getting handouts from the Department of Defense saying what surplus military equipment was available for sale. So I went in and talked to Dick and said, look, let's write some spots for this, public service spots, because the Department of Defense needs our help. So we came on and we would do a really fast, hard, 30-second, two-voice spot for a destroyer. Time for your own destroyer. Get them while they last. The Department of Defense, call Norfolk, Virginia. You know. Just stuff like that. Just crazy stuff like that.
Did you actually give a contact number? So did you ever have a feedback?
No, of course not. Yeah, I couldn't find anybody who wanted to buy a battleship or something.